Welcome to episode 17 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I'm your host, Kofi Outlaw, and with me this fine day is my co-host, Matthew Mueller.
What up, what up?
And stepping out from behind the camera once again is producer Jim Viscardi.
Bow, bow, bow.
All right, guys, well, in this episode, we have a lot to talk about on a lot of sides of the fandom. We have to talk about Supernatural coming to an end, The Walking Dead's big slaughter fest. We're going to talk about that Avengers Endgame rumored runtime, and also the big mess that spilled out of Zack Snyder's mouth this past weekend when he spilled tea on basically everything have to do with the DCEU. We're going to get to all that and more this episode, and I just wanted to say, if you've been riding with us for 17 episodes now, thank you very much for joining Comic Book Nation. If you're new to the show, welcome aboard, and we hope you ride with us after this. If you want to subscribe, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, all those venues. You can kind of look up, subscribe, and continue the journey. We post new episodes every Wednesday and Friday on the site and on social media, so we're not hard to find. All right, that said, let's jump into it because, like I said, we got a lot to talk about today on a lot of side of things, and I think we're going to start with an ending. Supernatural. Supernatural is coming to an end. The showrunners and cast made that official announcement this past Friday, right before we got out of here, saying that next season, season 15, is going to be the final season of the show. And a lot of people are sad and kind of bittersweet. I mean, this show was carried for longer than just about any show I can think of.
Almost entirely by its fan base.
Yeah, by its fandom. And to give credit to its stars, Jared Padalecki and Jensen Ackles, I mean, these are two guys who early on in their careers, people were kind of throwing them movie roles and possibilities and things you could do after the show. But these were two guys who really just kind of stepped back, looked at what they had, looked at their fandom and said, nah, like, we're good. Like, we're going to milk this thing for what it's worth, and not even in a bad way.
No, just, yeah.
Like, they put a lot of creative power behind expanding Supernatural into an all-out brand and kind of merchandising it and getting that money and kind of putting themselves in a position to kind of reap the benefits of that show along with creator Eric Kripke. And they've been like a little tight-knit family just kind of getting this their little CW money, not even little anymore, but good CW money. And it's about time for it to come to an end. I mean, at season 15, we're like 8 seasons longer than I thought this show was going to run. I mean, I've been covering Supernatural news for like 10 years now. So just to put that in perspective.
The crazy thing is, just looking at it from a programming standpoint, that leaves a huge hole in CW's you know, programming.
It is, but it's kind of a part of a larger thing that we're not going to get into too deep right now, but about what is happening with the CW and, and kind of what the shifts are. Arrow's going away, Supernatural going away. Those are two of their arguably biggest branding platforms for being this kind of fandom, geekdom, culture kind of a channel that they rebranded themselves as after the teen drama stuff of the, you know, 2000s.
Yep.
And now we're kind of unsure. There's a lot more Roswells and a lot less Arrows kind of showing up on the CW and is kind of unsure where that all is going. So, yeah, I mean, but Supernatural is going to end on a high note with the good. I mean, its fandom is locked in place and they're going to have plenty of syndication money.
You think they'll try and fit in a Stephen Amell appearance on that show before?
I mean, that would be very fun if he just made an appearance. They just, because they're always like hanging out, shooting next to each other and kind of hanging out with each other. I mean, him, Jared Padalecki, and Stephen Amell posted a picture of them having a beer, joking about how they're going to be part of the unemployed actors club pretty soon. And so that would be nice. There's a lot, a ton of things that would be cool to see before the show ends. I was just writing a piece right before we stepped in here about Jeffrey Dean Morgan from The Walking Dead talking about the show ending. And it'd be cool to see him making one last appearance if one or the brothers or both of them die or something, or they have to have some kind of final confrontation and have to get like heaven on their side to see John Winchester kind of step out. And
well, that's like
out.
One of the cool things about like knowing a show was going to be like have one more final season, right? Like so many times shows just get canceled and like that's it. And but knowing that this is going to be the final season, it allows, you know, for fans to speculate a little bit on what we can see, but it also gives the, you know, the show an opportunity to pull all of that stuff together, right? Get Jeffrey Dean Morgan back and pull in some, you know, faces we haven't seen in a while for one last hurrah.
Yeah, I mean, 15 yeah, and years, that kind
that's a lot of faces.
That's about all there is to say about it in my book. We're going to miss you, Supernatural. You've held it down a long time and entertained a lot of people, but we got one more final season, and we hope to see a lot of fun surprises. Yeah, Jeffrey Dean Morgan and a Felicia Day appearance is like, you know, the two things on the list I would say we'd need. But all right, well, moving right along to the land of the somewhat living. This is we're going to talk about The Walking Dead, and this past week was the penultimate episode of this season, which is season 9 of The Walking Dead. And if you know anything about the comic books, we're kind of getting to the Whisperers arc. We're not getting into it. I mean, we are dead into it now. And there was one major kind of horrific scene from the comics that they finally brought over to the live show, a live action show this week, which is when the leader of the Whisperers, Alpha, kind of has this big showdown with our heroic group of survivors who in the comic involve Rick and like other people, but in this show it's way different. Yeah, half the people that are gone or planning to go. And so we got this big kind of episode that was a very heartfelt episode for much of it. It was very dramatic, more than horror, until the very end. And it was an extended episode, and those last 20 minutes are pretty horrific. Basically, if you haven't seen this, turn your little ears off for about the next minute of the Walking Dead talk. But, I mean, you're sure you've heard about it. Yeah. Basically, Alpha, the leader of the Whisperers, takes a bunch of people from this big fair all the surviving communities are having. And she horribly murders them, cuts off their heads as better still zombified. It puts them on spikes to mark the territory of to say to basically the survivors' communities, this is where your territory ends and mine begins. Like, this is the borderline. And she captures Daryl, Michonne, and Carol, and then lets Daryl kind of walk out and has to see this, and then, or just kind of know about all this, and that, you know, she has a whole army of zombies that she controls. Like, one of the most massive herds we've ever seen that she has her people steering and can use as a weapon of mass destruction. And then while they're walking with the end of this episode, we find that there are 10 spikes marking the border wall with 10 heads of 10 characters from the show that just got wiped out like that. Now, to be fair, this is The Walking Dead, and they pull some tricks, and there were some tricks involved in this one, too, because some of the characters, most of the characters...
Some, I was going to say.
Most of the characters are characters we don't really care about. There's, like, August Sampson, I think his name is, that actor who was playing the highwaymen, these guys, I mean, who clear the road.
People.
Who do they kill?
To get rid of,
yeah. Yeah, they introduced, I forget what the old lady's name is, Tammy or something. They killed her. The big ones, the big three, okay, let's just get to the big three, were Edith, Tara, whatever her, however you say her name, and Henry. And Henry's arguable because Henry was a fill-in for Carl that nobody really wanted. And so seeing him get killed
was the scrappy dude of Walking Dead.
Yeah, basically. And like the big thing about him getting killed was they're like, man, Carol's going to be pissed now. And like, that's the biggest joy of seeing Henry get killed. His love story with the daughter of the Whisperer's leader and stuff. Like, nobody really cared. So, I mean, it was horrific to see a bunch of heads of people we knew from the show kind of cut off. And it was more tragic because the doctor, I forget his name, Sadiq, I think his name is, at the end of the episode, does this monologue because they captured him too, but they forced him to watch and then like let go and try to instill fear in the other ones. But he gets to give this whole kind of moving speech about how they fought, and he tells about how they were captured and the highwaymen came in and they all fought together and tried to battle, but they just got overwhelmed and slaughtered and, you know, all that. And that was kind of sad.
Like, it's just cool that like it was one of those truly terrifying moments that you love about The Walking Dead.
Yeah, they pulled a lot of trickery about them seeing the heads on the spikes and revealing one at a time.
I love
that. And cutting back and forth to people looking around the city and saying, like, where's so-and-so? And, like, where's so, they're missing, I can't. And then the panic starting to build because they can't find people.
And the big fake out with Ezekiel.
Yeah, Ezekiel, yeah. King Ezekiel, who in the comics does get horribly slaughtered in the Walker, in the Whisperer.
So does Rosita.
Yeah, so does Rosita. Yeah. And so there was a big fake out because Rosita's pregnant. Ezekiel's like happier than ever. And people were thinking like this was going to be some hard hitting Walking Dead.
Because whenever you get happy in The Walking Dead.
So I have a question.
That's it.
Would you have rather them have just gone ahead and Like, I get why they didn't, right? Because they need to
keep
their stars.
I don't think they can.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, it's not about what I want. Like, every time I start thinking about what I want, I'm like, oh, but you can't. You don't have enough stars left.
Like, if those stars were still here and that wasn't a factor, would you have rather them stuck?
Yeah, absolutely. If the exception, I think,
would have been
Ezekiel, Rosita, those would have been, like, the smaller deaths we're talking about in that context.
But I think Ezekiel still has a bunch of story, you know, of story left that they could tell.
Oh yeah, I mean,
like, to me, his TV character is infinitely more interesting than
And that's a lot to do with Kahari Payton. But so, like, the show, I mean, at this point, it's kind of hard to say with The Walking Dead to say you want to have the books, because we're so far away from the books.
It's
the
like show Game of Thrones territory level, like, far away.
Even more so. Like, I mean, they just straight up change entire lifelines of major characters. And major characters in the books become minor in the show and vice versa.
Yeah, because, so, like, Andrew is such a huge part of the books. And, yeah, like,
and this is, like,
that's been gone so long now.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it was pretty shocking. Can't wait. We've been promised more kind of big turns on The Walking Dead season finale. Kind of wait and see what that's all about. Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of with BD right now, in the sense, BD's not here. He's out doing his all-day cowboy act across the world for us right now. He's in another location that we can't tell you about for a thing we can't tell you about. But he did a whole – I mean, he's done a whole great breakdown on this. If you want to learn more, visit our Walking Dead page and watch his After the Dead show from this past week, where he and Janelle Wheeler break down this episode in a lot more detail than we're going to do here. Mm-hmm. But I'm with him in the sense that I think the show has found a footing to keep surviving after Rick Grimes. And to me, it is kind of interesting in some ways without him, because you don't know what could happen. Like, now, except for pretty much Daryl and Carol, I think anybody could go at any time, or at least there's that danger.
Yeah.
And yeah, and spreading around the storylines, they become more cohesive and thematic. They're not just about center. They don't have to center on, like, one or two people. Mm-hmm. They can be about whole ideas of society and people and things like that. And that's interesting. So I'm with you, Walking Dead, still. I'm looking forward to the season finale. All right. Now, we're going to shift over to you, buddy, Matt Mueller, because there's some comic stuff to take us through this week. By the time this episode gets up, the new books will be on store shelves, and there's some big milestone, or at least one big milestone book this week. Why don't you tell us about that, buddy?
Well, so this week, I mean, there's a lot of other books as well. This is actually a pretty good week for comics, but one of the bigger ones is Detective Comics 1000.
And it's like 35.
Yeah, it's
covers.
So, well, yeah, well, that too, but it's also just, that issue is huge. It took me so long to read that.
Yeah, I think one of our editors, Roland, was saying it's like 96 pages.
It's like a tiny trade.
Yeah, it's a lot. Now, what's great is it's kind of an anthology, right? So you have Brian Michael Bendis, Jeff Johns gets a story in there. Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo are back together in a story. And there's a bunch of other creators as well. And, you know, like with any anthology, right, some hit, some don't. One of the biggest things, though, is, like, and we're going to get into some spoiler territory.
So if you haven't read your comics yet, or haven't read Detective Comics yet,
because I'm about to put a big one out there.
Spoiler alert for Detective Comics 1000.
So towards the end, you kind of get a little bit of a monologue. And someone's going on about, you know, the usual things like justice and sending the world right and Batman and this and that. But then they reveal themselves to be the Arkham Knight, which fans will know from the hit video game
Arkham Knight, right? Yeah.
Now, in that game's case, and I'm going to throw out a spoiler that I'm pretty sure I'm fine.
That game is like six years old.
Right? We're good.
Go ahead. I have the finale of that game to play. Don't spoil
Did
anything.
Did you really?
No, I do, actually.
Are you serious?
Yeah. No, I mean, go ahead, but I know. I already know what it is.
All right, cool. That was the problem with it. Most people knew as soon as, like, they came out and said, like, hey, this is character, whatever. Is this mystery character?
It's Jason Todd. Now, in the game, not in the book. In the book, we have no idea.
Yes, and so he's very much, like, they're leaning heavily on the actual medieval aspect. Like, the dude's got a straight-up sword and a knight's helmet. You know, it's got that tech-heavy thing, but it looks like that. So he will be a big part of the coming arc. So if you are a fan of that and you're looking for them to do something kind of crazy different with it.
Explain why he's still called Arkham.
They just say that.
Well, I don't even think they say it's Arkham Knight. I mean,
it says Arkham Knight. Does it say?
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay, right.
Now, I cannot remember if it's his narration or if it's actually them just writing it, but they do write Arkham Knight in it. So, and he's a dead ringer anyway. The armor looks like, except for the sword. So it's interesting, but it's really worth reading. Like
the Bendis story is probably hands down my favorite one. That's the one that they released early, and ever since then, like, I mean, Bendis on Batman is something that every fan of Bendis or a Batman fan is kind of just waiting for. Right, like he's doing his Batman thing in those weird Walmart specials. He's he'll do something like this, but like, you know, I love Tom King. I think Tom King's Batman, mm-hmm. you know, has its ups and downs, but for the most part, I think it was a great run. I like his.
But it's going to be a long run when it is all said and done.
Yeah,
and it'll be time to bring in someone else. And honestly, this is one of the reasons that when Bendis announced his first book for DC, mm-hmm. I'm sure I'm not the only one that was a little
disappointed. I was shocked that it wasn't.
Right, yeah. I'm like, Superman? Because Bendis has a penchant for writing street-level characters and those kinds of things.
I just want to see him and Alex Maleev go at Batman for a nice, healthy, long run.
And this is a nice preview. Now, what I will say, you brought up Tom King. Tom King does have a great story in here. It's involves the whole Batman family, mm-hmm. and it's quintessential Tom King. So if you don't like
Tom King's
humor,
you're not going to like that story.
You know, that back and forth, I thought it was absolutely hilarious. So fantastic.
Well, again, even like the Scott Snyder story just goes to show why Scott Snyder is one of the best Batman writers. It's just
that story threw me for a loop.
It really is. Like, these anniversary issues usually get, there's usually like one lead story and then a ton of crap. But this one's got some good stuff in it. It's got some crap in there too. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's got it's got good stuff in it.
And then of course, we talked if you've been paying attention to Marvel Comics, you've probably seen those very vague ads in each book. So we finally at C2E2 got the reveal of what those are.
The worst kept secret in comics. So Jonathan Hickman's back writing the X-Men. Or not, he's back at Marvel, but writing the X-Men.
Now, who is the team coming with him? So his two books are House of X and Power of X.
Yes, R.B. Silva is doing one of them, and oh, dear God, maybe Paco Medina?
No, it's Pepe Larraz.
Pepe Larraz.
Okay, so now, there are two separate books. Now, evidently, you were supposed to pronounce it The Power of Ten and then House of Something. Like, they went on this. They had to, like, define it, which is a little too
House of X and Powers
for me,
X.
But okay.
They were typical Hickman titles.
But they did show a cover image of a bunch of different X-Men, like a weird Magic Colossus mashup, which mm-hmm. was actually kind of cool. There's Firestars back there, like some kind of B-list and C-list characters are kind of making their way in there. Mm-hmm. So it gives the impression that this is going to be pulling from all over the place, different mm-hmm. timelines.
Well, that's right. But it's also got two different Wolverines on it. Yeah. We still have no idea who the woman sitting on the bench is.
Nope.
I think Jamie mentioned that it may be, you know, it could be Moira McTaggart.
That's a good possibility,
you know,
too.
A good possibility.
Lalandra is back there. Mm-hmm. Are you a Hickman fan?
I liked parts of Hickman's Avengers. I liked New Avengers.
Okay.
I liked Infinity. I did not like his Avengers proper book.
Where do you stand on Hickman?
I liked everything he did. I think he added like a lot of good sci-fi mm-hmm. elements to the books. I mean, nothing more far out there than anything Grant Morrison has ever done or something like that in terms of like fantastical concepts or beings that he's introduced.
I feel like Hickman.
But I liked Infinity. I liked Secret War. I liked New Avengers. I liked the regular Avengers and the A-lifts. And
Hickman's favorite book that he's ever done to me is still Secret Warriors. I love that series so much.
I like New Avengers too.
Secret Warriors, though, during Dark Reign.
Yeah.
No, he wrote that.
Yep.
It was like, I didn't know who he was back then.
Yep.
I wasn't really like checking for him by mm-hmm. name when I read through all that.
Yeah, that was the first place where they.
Yeah, no, that was a really great book.
The
Secret Warriors
Hydra,
was one of my favorite books of the 2000s by far.
Oh, so you're even a bigger Hickman fan than
you. I wasn't really checking.
It's crazy
for
when you think about it now. He's been there. He's been around for a while now, too.
Yeah, back then, all I knew was like Grant Morrison was doing X-Men and Geoff Johns was cracking open DC and all that stuff, and he kind of snuck in there somewhere.
The same way some people are with Tom King, I tend to be with Hickman. I'm a little less on the enthusiastic mm-hmm. side. I like his stuff. I like some of those, especially Secret Warriors. I liked Avengers at the beginning, and then I was like, okay, like I had checked out because I was like, this is just, it gets a little, it's kind of like my problem with Justice League.
Like, well, like his weird love for the Squadron Supreme, I just could never really understand.
It's sometimes it's dense and not for me it's not like in a helpful way or a way to push the plot forward.
Well, he just goes really big sci-fi.
Yeah, he has a tendency to use characters as plot devices and not as characters.
And it's the same thing I have with Morrison sometimes. Like, Morrison is good and bad for me. Right now, Green Lantern is fantastic, and that's the good Morrison. But, you know, I have my other Morrison runs that are kind of like too ambitious for their own good almost. So, Hickman, I'm hoping this could be a great thing, and I'm excited. So.
All right. Is there one more we're going to do before you? Is that it?
No, that's it.
All right. So that's going to be it for our comics roundup. Like we said, this week, I mean, you're going to be pretty busy just reading Detective Comics 1000. So
get your
Batman on. have a good one with that one. And also check for Jonathan Hickman's Mark on the X-Men, which I will be interested to see. All right. So stay tuned, because when we come back, we are going to address that rumored Avengers Endgame runtime. And we're going to talk about Zack Snyder spilling that DCEU tea. All right.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So, today, this morning, we got hit with a bunch of new Avengers Endgame character posters
36.
For both the 36 altogether. I'm sure there's some reason for that. I mean, maybe there's going to be a Wu-Tang thing, and there's like 36 chambers to the MCU. Who knows? People are just already going nuts on theories about these posters, about everything, about who was shown, who wasn't shown. Some of them are black and white. Some of them are in color for the living and the dusted. And that was all
well. Some of the memes
are
great.
And like, yeah, and so, and like, yeah, there's some memes already popping up of Deadpool and Goose the Cat. And like, it's crazy.
Edward Norton. That hurts me so much. Edward Norton one I dug.
Marvel fans were freaking out about that one. But the bigger story has been this kind of talk about Avengers Endgame. There's been some rumors. I don't think anything that I've seen is substantiated to the point where I'm like, no, it's irrefutable. But the rumors are that it's like, basically, like, what, 3 hours and 2 minutes or something like that. People have already been making joking, like, the 2 minutes are going to be the ones that change our lives forever.
That's probably true.
I don't know what it is. The reason I'm bringing this up is not so much about Endgame. I think at this point, Marvel's earned the right to turn over nearly 20 films to tell whatever story at whatever length they want.
Titanic,
your ass
was
3 hours.
Is going
to sit through that. Let's be real. Your ass is going to sit through it. Like, there's not even an argument here. You're going to sit.
Yeah.
You're not going to be like, all right, 2 hours, you didn't get me, I'm out, like, and get up and leave. Yeah, no, like, yeah. So you're going to sit. So all the blowharding on Twitter, like, knock yourself out, but you're going to be in that theater seat. So just be real with yourself at the end of the day. Yeah. But the thing about it is, yeah, I mean, this is a movie where I just don't understand when people became so ADD
obsessed
addled
about runtimes
that they can't, like, I mean, people act like a 3 hour movie is a crime.
Right.
Like, no, absolutely not. Great 3 hour
Gladiator was 3 hours.
Gladiator was 3 hours. Yeah, the Godfathers are 3 hours.
I love them.
Titanic is 3 hours.
I sat through Gladiator twice in the theater.
Yeah, me too.
The movie's great.
Back to back or?
No, not back to back.
Yeah, I know.
That one's rough.
But the point is, like, there are, if a movie can tell you a compelling story really well and keep you entertained, then it shouldn't matter how.
I mean, it's got to do so much, right? It's got to deal with the ramifications of Infinity War. It then needs to fix the ramifications of Infinity War, and then it needs to set up what the new Marvel Cinematic Universe is going to look like. Like, that's 3 hours right there.
Yeah. I mean, I hope it's not like Lord of the Rings, an hour long.
Oh God, epilogue.
But at least this isn't like a Hobbit situation where you look at it and go, "Well, they're going to make one book and they're going to turn it into a 3 hour movie."
Well, right, this is the second movie. This is the second part. They can't go and be like, or do what they did with Harry Potter, right? Then they split the last part.
And you can see how Infinity War could have easily been 3 hours too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like, and I would have sat through it all.
Exactly. I mean, it would have been a longer, like, just a slightly slower heist movie, but, like, there was room for a lot of expansion. I mean, in the time that when you rewatch it, like, every second of that movie, like, actually counts.
Yeah.
like you don't even get to most things before the first hour is up. You're like, oh man, like we're just fighting in New York and that's like 45 minutes. Yeah. Like,
what was that? I remember like everyone was kind of bitching and moaning that like the Netflix heroes didn't show up or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. didn't show up or whatnot. I was like, where?
Yeah.
Where would you have put them?
Just all on the same helicarrier. All in one quick shot. They're just like, yeah, like we just need to flying into one Wakanda, then we just get lost in the
and they're
crowd.
All at the window. Like, yeah. So you can just see them.
What's that? Like, someone say, well, they could just put the Punisher down the streets of New York or Daredevil just looking up at the sky at something. I'm like, no, who gives a shit? Sorry.
Yeah. Wow.
Twice.
The editor chief and the producer of the show, Jim Viscardi, everybody. But
clearly, no, passionate topic for him.
Clearly, yeah, but no, that is true. Who does give in that bad word you said? Endgame almost has to be 3 hours. I mean, from what we're theorizing, there's going to be a major attack, like right in the first act. Mm-hmm. First hour could just be Avengers headquarters getting smashed to bits and like. Having that,
it should be super depressing
battle.
Because the Avengers just got their butts handed to them.
Yeah, I know. I'm really hoping that that's not the case.
Well, we're all living in the darkest timeline, so maybe they are too. Maybe they're going to make a hop to a new timeline. We'll see.
But it could also just be as easily solved as like Thanos may want to come and finish what he started, and then Captain Marvel shows up, pushes him back, and then the movie goes.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of we. Here's a thing that I want to end on here and why people shouldn't complain.
Oh, no.
Yes, it's 3 hours, but you need to kind of take it for the gift of what it is. Like I said, this is the culmination of almost 20 films of building. This is the answer you've been waiting for a year, and you know blessedly nothing about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know nothing other than
this is a once-in-a-lifetime kind of thing. Because even right now, there is nothing that has started remotely like what Iron Man did 10 years ago right now. So not even like 10 years from now, we will not have something like Endgame again.
No,
and you know nothing about it. Like this is the purest movie experience you might have like in the next 5, 10 years, maybe your lifetime. Like something so anticipated that you're going to be soaking up every single frame because you've seen almost none of this film. And if it is 3 hours, that's like 2 hours and 55 minutes that you have not even seen a frame of. Like,
that's very true.
And so, like, just go in and enjoy it. Don't complain beforehand. You know what you got to do with your bladder. You know how to read the rhythm of a movie. When there's a, you know, after a big battle scene, when everything is going to settle down, go then. Otherwise, just enjoy the fact that you're going to get this epicness. You know nothing about it. And it could be a very well, thorough, satisfying viewing experience.
I will say, too, I think one of the things leading credence to this is that Fandango, like, tweeted it out. Like, I can get the, oh, maybe it was just an over-eager intern being like, oh, I saw the news. It must be out there. If AMC said it, then we got to say it, too. But at the same time, like, it's also Fandango.
No, I mean, I expect it to be 3 hours.
Yeah.
Like, I don't expect less. If it's 2 hours, I'm going to be like, what the hell was
There's
that?
There's no way that.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, yeah, I'm expecting 3 hours. I think you should, too. And I'm so glad that I don't know anything. And I hope we all make it down this final stretch of 1 month. And getting in there just so unspoiled as possible.
It is 1 month away.
And just take it all in. All right. Well, moving along to our last thing. Man, bruh, we got to talk. So
good weekend to be a Zack Snyder fan.
I guess Zack Snyder has completed whatever legal gag obligations he had to WB. We've been seeing it in trickles, right? For like ever since
all on Vero.
Ever since fall 2018 on Vero on his like little photography
Here's
site that
storyboard.
He and two other people like use, like basically I'm knocking Vero, but a lot of people use it, but it's not like a it's for artists. It's like an artist like it's him and James Mangold are like on there or something like that saying like chromatic shot of blah 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 whatever. So he was just dropping kind of Justice League spilling tea about what could have been, what WB cut and all that for a while. But this weekend he held a panel called Director's Cuts.
Right.
Great.
Where they watched the Batman Superman Ultimate Edition.
Well, they watched Dawn of the Dead.
Okay.
They watched
there was like what, three?
They
films?
Watched Man of Steel?
Watchmen, right?
Oh no, they watched they watched Dawn of the Dead, okay. Watchmen, and Batman vs. Superman.
Okay. So then he did a Q&A. And man, the stuff that came out of this stuff was just, you could go to our DC page on the site, but it was crazy, and people are still pissed off about
now,
like, half of it.
I'm going to defend Zack Snyder a little
bit. Well, I'm a Zack Snyder apologist.
Which, well, oh,
I don't get people who say he's a bad director, first of all. From like a technical skill, like film school perspective, Zack Snyder is very much not a bad director. Mm-hmm. He makes great images.
Mm-hmm.
He can put together deep films.
Oh, he's one of the only, you know, directors in the last 5 or 10 years to easily have his own distinctive visual identity when it comes to
a Zack Snyder film.
Exactly. You know a Zack Snyder film when you see
it. And like
good and
for
bad.
As much as they get slammed, like people keep going back and finding great things in his film. Like, if nothing else, at least the imagery mm-hmm. lives on and becomes iconic in and of itself. Even the low points like Sucker Punch still have images still and stuff
Sucker Punch. That like,
people are like, you know, that movie. People, you know, that are iconic.
Yep.
And, that's a gorgeous movie.
Yeah, exactly. and just the, so I'm an apologist or at least a rationalist in the sense that, like, be fair. You didn't like what he did with the DCEU. Mm-hmm. Okay. But, like, he's not a horrible director. And there are a lot of people who really still... I mean, Man of Steel was a big, impactful movie for a lot of people, even if you didn't like it. But, man, Zack Snyder is off the chain.
Well, what I want to say is that I think... So I watched the last two. And I think the big quotes that came out of those two, I think I want to make it kind of clear, is, like, Zach has no, in his tone, there was no ill will.
Yeah.
He just had fun with it. So he's not like slamming anything.
Yeah,
he's
let's set this in context. I think what you're alluding to is the one that has gotten the internet all triggered is the question about Batman killing.
Yep.
And in Batman v Superman, this was a big deal. Batman's using machine guns. He's blowing guys away bloody, like, you know, in a chase scene. And somebody brought it up to him about, you know, how Batman kills in the movie. And he said, and I'll quote, "Someone says to me, Ben Affleck or Batman killed a guy. I'm like, F, really? Wake the F up," Snyder said. "I guess that's what I'm saying. Once you lost your virginity to this movie, then this effing movie, then you come to me and say something like, my superhero wouldn't do that. I'm like, are you serious? I'm like down the effing road on that. It's a cool point of view to be like, my heroes are innocent. That's cool. But you're living in an effing dream world." And it sounds mad aggro when you read it. It sounds like he's just being nasty, but I think he's just giving his honest, like you said, his honest reaction, which is just like, he's just a fan who has a different point of view of these heroes. And he's as emphatic as all of us are screaming at each other around this office,
mm-hmm.
which is he's just a fan of the, if Batman were really operating, this dude would have to kill somebody eventually. Mm-hmm. Like, it would just be part of the campaign. Like, there's no, and there's a certain amount of argument, I've done this back and forth, of like, yeah, this whole, I mean, it's in comics and animation that Batman's such a precision tactician that he can take down a whole squadron of armed vigilantes on a moving convoy and nobody really gets that hurt, just tied up and hung up. But like, yeah, in the real world.
Not realistic.
Yeah. Like, yeah. To take down a whole van of guys, you're just going to throw an explosive, blow that van.
I was going to say, that's the best way. Flip the van. Flip and if the they van. Die in there, what?
Yeah, if some of them die, like.
I didn't kill them.
Yeah, you're doing crimes. Like, I didn't go in to kill anybody, but like. Yeah.
Stop in the van.
And this is a brutal, angry Batman.
Yeah.
Like, and.
It fit his.
Exactly.
His take on Batman. It fit.
Mm-hmm.
And especially the one we're seeing that, like, it has come, the Batman who comes back after the Battle of Metropolis, right?
Yeah.
And after this is like post 9/11 Batman, who is also not just a character, but if you watch the Ultimate Edition, and I, like, one of the first articles I did here when I got here was one that's like Batman, why Batman v Superman is smarter than you think. It was kind of a review of the mm-hmm. Ultimate Edition. I mean, that's a major, the movie makes it, that full version makes it so clear what a political allegory and political social allegory mm-hmm. that movie really is. And in this, Batman is post 9/11 America. Mm-hmm. Like, he is the America that used to believe in justice, but had something really horrible happen, and now is kind of on the notion of sacrificing freedoms for security and surveilling everybody and doing all this
and
stuff.
And judging someone
and
before
judging, yeah, exactly.
Done, yeah, they've done anything.
Before they've done anything and looking at this other as a threat. And
Even though it gave us that amazing Ben Affleck line.
Yeah. Which one?
The 1%. There's a...
Oh, if there's a 1% chance. Yeah.
The way he delivered, I love that.
And it's... Anyway. But that's like how the mentality... That's an allegory, right? And so, like, yeah, the part of the allegory is we're doing brutal things.
Mm-hmm.
We're using technology and stuff to just, like, wipe people out and... without, you know, because they're enemy combatants, and that's our new policy towards enemy combatants. And that's also what this movie's all about. Now, you can kind of harp and hem and haw about the character. My thing about this, and I keep coming back to this, is it's hard for me to support people who say, you're ruining this character. Because comic books are not solid. They're malleable. They always have been. They're literally a form of literature that you establish something, then you hand it off to a new creative team of people and say, now it's time for you to put your stamp on this. And there's this idea that we should all adhere to this core. And like, yeah, that makes sense. But there's also room to deviate from that core and explore things away from it, as long as you eventually bring it back. And I think Zack Snyder has made it clear over and over again that, like, his Batman and Superman, these are the trainees. Mm-hmm. And a lot of this storyline was going to be about how they meet and influence one another and kind of form into the people we know them to be.
Now, as a movie, it didn't always succeed.
No, this was, I mean, but yeah.
But I understand and like the idea and the premise.
Dude, here's where it gets crazy, because this wasn't the only crazy thing he said about the Batman killing thing. If you read his full thing, his plans, I mean, this man had like a 9 Skywalker saga.
Insane.
Like, thing like that involved the nightmare sequence. Like, I just don't believe they let him put that nightmare sequence in the film if you were not fully prepared.
Mm-hmm. Well, he even for, like, says they the were nine, on board.
Yeah, for the 9 films that we're going to take.
Well, right. Well, they said, like, the first script that he and Terrio did together, they did not even shoot, because that script was done before Batman vs. Superman, I think, even came out. Then Batman vs. Superman came out. The reviews were, Warner Brothers got, and said, hey, can you change X, Y, and Z? And he was like, okay. Because I guess Justice League was supposed to be a lot darker in that. I don't know how you get much darker.
I mean, and what's crazy is I was reading, when he goes into his description about, like, well, here's where I wanted Dark Side. Here's where I wanted the nightmare scenario to be like the Justice League broke up, and then, you know, Batman's still fighting, and Cyborg takes Flash back in time, and Lois is the key.
Yeah, there's like some Back to the Future craziness. We got to go back twice. Like, he's saying, I mean, he was going into.
What is it? He said Dark Side would have killed Lois.
Here's just some things that we would have gotten at a certain point in the movie. Okay, here's a nightmare sequence, and I'm going to try to explain as best I can. So basically, he had done, and a bunch of team had done, some research on a certain version of time travel theory that said the Earth has to be in the exact same position for you to be back in the exact same position if you're traveling back in time. There would be only 2 points where they could go back and 2 windows of opportunity to travel to this exact point in time to warn Bruce Wayne. So nightmare, what we saw in the beginning is Flash's is a first timeline where they send back Flash, but that one doesn't work.
He showed up too early.
Screwed up. Yeah, he shows up too early. And that's what he says. I'm too early. And that causes the series of events that lead to Nightmare. And then in the Nightmare, knowing, because Bruce Wayne saw Flash, he knows this is possible. So him and a half of whatever's left of Cyborg at that point scheme to go back and, like, warn them again about this whole Lois Lane thing. And somewhere in there, in the ruined timeline, after Flash's warning, Lois Lane's hanging out in the Batcave. Darkseid boom tubes in, fries her, causing Superman to embrace the anti-life equation, become the evil Superman we see in Nightmare. Batman's still fighting with the remnants of the Justice League, and then he and Cyborg go back, send a warning, the right warning this time, and then in Justice League, and they straighten it all out.
Which is crazy, because in that thing, it's so funny that we get on Snyder for, like, doing The Dark Knight Returns, The Death of Superman, and, like, all these other things in BVS. And then in Justice League, he was going to do, like, 3 more stories.
Oh, God, yeah.
Shoehorn them all together.
Injustice.
Like, and I'm like, dude, scope, man, is important.
But this was going to be like a 3-arc film. Because, like, when he started dropping hints on Vero, that's what it was all about. It was like Justice League Part 1 would tease Darkseid. Mm-hmm. And we'd even see maybe young Darkseid when he came to Earth during that ancient war and all that stuff. But then it was going to be a 3-arc buildup to when they then go to, like, Apocalypse in the second movie to rescue Superman. Mm-hmm. And then the third movie is them coming back to Earth, which is fighting its own battle against Apocalypse, which is basically like the Superman animated series. Animated series. I forget which actual series had that whole three-part war with Darkseid, but that's essentially the plot line.
Yeah, it was that Superman animated series. Yeah.
Superman gets his butt whipped in the first part. Batman jumps through a portal, goes to Apocalypse, has to like fight Desaad and like outwit all these other people, get Superman, come back to Earth, where Superman like has to defend Metropolis against Darkseid, and like, yeah, that, and that's a great story. So like, yeah,
they're all great stories individually. Shoving them together.
It'd be crazy like if they had just given Snyder an Injustice movie.
Oh my God! I would.
Yeah, something that
watch that in a heartbeat.
Perfect for a dark story for a dark guy mm-hmm. would have been perfect.
Like
with
Snyder would people, fit.
He
now.
Could have done everything he wanted to do. Batman could kill people. Superman could kill people.
In this Elseworlds era of DC, it would have fit perfectly. Like let him go nuts.
Yeah.
Do his three movies, his Injustice saga, right? Like go to town. But as a you know, I think we've known from like the Marvel films, like two is kind of the max. Like two big storylines is kind of the max that will mesh together into a cohesive film.
I think, I mean, if you were confused about the nightmare sequence, like, yeah, trying to explain, my only thing was trying to explain the two timelines and two windows where people can travel back. That would have broken the internet with just time travel theories, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, the whole anti-life equation would have broken people too.
Yeah. Like, but here's the thing, I want to see it.
I know.
All of this, like I'm like, no, that wouldn't have been a good movie, probably. No, I have lots of issues with it.
Just
however,
wanted to see Darkseid, man.
I wanna see it.
Well, I think people were shouting out in the crowd that it should be an animated movie, and there's a DC Universe animated branch, which I think would be awesome if they did a thing where Zack Snyder got to be like involved in writing.
But is there any way WB spends more money?
If they think there's money to be made, like an animated feature or series of features where Zack Snyder gets to make the Snyderverse Justice League story he wanted to do.
Well, didn't he also confirm that the Snyder Cut exists?
Uh-huh. Yes. Oh, that's a small part we left out of this whole discussion.
Yeah, I know, for real.
Yeah, the Snyder Cut exists.
I want to make sure we get that in before we close today.
Yeah, the Snyder Cut exists, according to Zack Snyder. Well, let's just say, because there was a lot of controversy. A fan, he didn't say it during the Q&A. Afterwards, he was doing a signing. Mm-hmm. One guy, I forget his name. It was like Carlos, I think his name was. If I got your name wrong, man, I'm sorry. But he waited in line, he talked to him, and he asked about it, and he said essentially that, yeah, it exists, WB has it, it's not up to me anymore, that's way out of my wheelhouse, it's up to them what they want to do with that. And that's basically, I mean, that's the way the business goes. But he basically soft-confirmed that, yeah, this Snyder Cut exists. So it's out there. I'm kind of torn, as I've written in every one of our articles about this, because I want to see it, I really do, because I was a Man of Steel fan, I love the Ultimate Edition of Batman v Superman, and I want to see it, but like, this would only be the beginning of something.
Right. It's not even the whole story.
No.
And like it would make you, Matt, even more angry because you wouldn't be able to see all the crazy come to an end.
Yeah, and then it would be just a whole other release, the Snyder Cut Part 2, and that's like making a whole other movie.
Then you you have to make that movie. That movie doesn't exist.
Exactly. So like no.
So
I
it's
mean,
really probably worth it to WB to not release that.
No,
leave
you're
that
opening,
can of worms. Shut.
At this point, I honestly would just like you said, I would let Zack Snyder. I would take the name recognition and the love of the Snyderverse now, if we're going to compartmentalize it, and just do it some other way.
Yeah.
Do a graphic novel.
Even do
novel.
It as a comic. Yeah, like
do
I said.
A graphic novel. Like do an animated film.
Snyder is an artistic guy. Like
do
he even
online
said.
Shorts for a while. Like a 8 to 12 piece online short.
Oh, man, the idea of
online
doing
shorts,
a comic
man.
Is,
like,
now I want
and just
that.
Bring all that to life in an animated online short. Don't spend live action.
It's not going to look like his movies.
Well, you pair him up with a great
his
artist.
His movies are gorgeous. Like I have issues with some of his movies, but the movies are gorgeous.
No, but you can do it in the style and homage
but
of it.
But it's
but
it,
people just want to see
I still kind of want
to
see it.
I know, but people want to see the story play out. So like there's ways to do it. And I think WB should just capitalize on the name recognition and find a little corner of an Elseworlds or something to do it. But yeah, if you are not a Zack Snyder fan, this was a pretty harrowing little experience for you, so we hope you recover. Let us know what you guys want to do about all of this kind of weird middle child of the DC franchise that's kind of sitting out here. You can hit us up on social media at the hashtag ComicBookNation and let us know your thoughts. That's going to do it for our show this week. As we said, you can subscribe to Comic Book Nation on Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify and iHeartRadio. Still no app, Amazon Music though, Matt. I'm sorry. I know you want Amazon Music, but I'm sure we'll know when it finally comes up. We'll let you know, buddy. You can also contact us individually on Twitter. You can find me at Kofi Outlaw. That's K-O-F-I Outlaw.
You can hit me up at Matt Mueller CB.
At Jim Viscardi.
And you guys have been leaving us some wonderful reviews. We really appreciate it. Anybody who's leaving us reviews, make sure you get in contact with us. We are sending out t-shirts and getting them out to you. So if you've heard your review read on the show and would like a piece of comic book swag, please hit us up. Let us know. And we can
hit us
get
up
that
on Twitter. Get us, shoot us an email. One of the guys last week sent me an email to the support at comic book. Just get in touch with any one of us and we'll get
make sure you
get
easiest it. Way is also just the hashtag comic book nation.
That's
we're always
true.
Checking it on Twitter.
Yeah, and just saying, hey, that was my review.
Yeah, hey, that was my review. Can you get, I would love to get a t-shirt or something, and then we'll take you off on the side and we'll get your information, your size, and we'll get it out to you. I think that's about it. I feel like I had something else to say. Oh, yes. We will be reading more reviews this week. We're going to do that in our next episode. I shouldn't say this week. You don't know when this episode takes place. It could be anywhere in any timelines. Two different timelines that we might have to fix.
Nice.
Two visit
done.
Visits. So,
way to bring that back around.
Yeah.
Oh, no. But, Dark Side is here.
Yeah. Oh, Dark Side. We got to take this episode again. Only this time provide more warnings about Zack Snyder. But, yeah, that'll do it for us here at Comic Book Nation. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.
Deuces.